Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
It's Friday, the 10th of April.
Coming up today, English cricket legend Mike Atherton joins us live from across the water.
That's a lovely shot by Michael Atherton. Keith Atherton's after it, but he won't get there. Four more. That's a better shot.
We speak to all Ireland winning frontline heroes.
A little bit tentative first thing today, but he's back into his rhythm now.
We speak to All-Ireland winning frontliners Lindsay Davey and Paddy Maher.
Plus, Alan Colley predicts a bright future for Irish football.
Game on 2FM.
And seeing as I'm in such a hurry this evening, you'll have all that and much more between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game on 2FM, provided you're not driving and listening to Leo Varadkar today. Nobody should be driving.
Why are you in such a hurry? You've shaved? Have you got something big on tonight? Any exciting plans for the weekend?
No, I had to do a TV gig earlier with Racing TV, so I said I better spruce myself up a bit, Marie.
I was thinking it wasn't for our show anyway.
No, but my daughter does want to know why you're wearing a Barcelona shirt and not a Real Madrid one.
I bought it when I was in Barcelona. I went over to see Liverpool play Barcelona last year, and I really liked it because it's purple and has a pink stripe down the side of it, and I hadn't seen it anywhere in Ireland. So there you go.
You just decided you were going to have the jersey to be on the winning team, whatever happened.
Of course, I had it in the bag and then I'd switched it when they lost 3-0. For bringing it up.
typical.
So anyway, we have another weekend of no sport, Ruby. Any plans?
Same old. No. What are the plans? I suppose the kids will ride the ponies, mow some more grass, the usual. It is Easter weekend though, so there will be Easter eggs on Sunday. Lent is over.
Is there any grass left?
It's going to be like Wimbledon when I'm finished with it.
I'd like to see some pictures of it. You should line a few pitches as well.
Pardon?
You should turn a few of the fields into a few pitches.
No, they're full of horses now. They're all on their summer holidays, so horses everywhere, Marie. They all have to be checked too. Okay. So, what about you? What's your plans?
I have big plans. Big, big plans. So, I don't know if most people have been following social media for the last while. They will have seen the Do It For Dan campaign. Seamus Coleman donated €15,000 to it today. It's for a little boy, Dan Donaher, who is very, very sick and his family needs to raise €2 million just to keep him alive. He's to get crucial treatment in the USA. And his mom and dad, Niall and Aisling, they're both Laois footballers, former Laois footballers. And my husband played with Niall and is very friendly with Aisling as well. So my little boy, Timmy, who is 7, has been campaigning to raise money for them for the last few weeks. He's raised almost €20,000. He's going to dye his hair on Sunday along with his dad. And I'm doing the dyeing because there's no hairdressers open.
God, I didn't realise they were that brave.
Yep. Let me at it. What could possibly go wrong?
Not much exactly. Who's going to see them anyway?
It's supposed to be blonde, but I mean, we'll see what it turns out.
Blonde can now come out green at times, can't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's a great cause and fair play to Timmy. The racing world, I suppose, last week was encouraging people if they were planning on having a bet on last week's English Grand National to update the money to the Do It For Dan cause. And seeing as the Irish Grand National would have been this Monday, Easter Monday, if you did think you might have a bet in that race, maybe you would donate it to Do It For Dan cause as well.
Yeah, that's a very, very good call. And there's plenty of it on social media. I know my Twitter has links to the campaign. So anybody who is interested in it, get out and do it for Dan and donate.
How exactly did Timmy raise 20,000?
He was just going around asking everybody that he knew online because he can't go anywhere. His Nana and Grandad are very generous. All of our friends have been donating. Loads of people have. It's brilliant. As I said, Seamus Coleman did today 15,000. And in fairness to Seamus, he does a huge amount for charity. Like, he's always donating. I saw someone tweet today, does he have any money left for himself at all? He spends so long donating. Okay, now, Ruby, we did get some news today that it's going to be another 3 weeks before lockdown is over. So it's going to be difficult for people. The FAI extended their ban on all football-related activity until the 5th of May. So what I'm trying to say is, we're going to have a lot of shows to fill over the next few weeks without sport. So it's going to be tough, but I think we can do it.
How's your phone book looking?
I am going to spend the weekend potholing, as Dunica would say. Everybody that I know, asking them, will they come on? Like you've been doing for the last few weeks. In fairness, you've been coming up now with the good guests. I've been impressed.
Thanks, Marie. Thanks. I'm starting to run a little bit dry, but I will have to start tapping friends for other people's numbers. But just c'est la vie. Such is life.
Yeah.
We'll keep going. We'll try and entertain the people of this country if nobody else is.
You'll be saved in people's phones now as do not answer. Then you'll know you'll be fully media. It'll be great.
Yeah. I get that feeling already. But sure, look, we'll keep trying to entertain all our listeners if we can and see who we can, see what rabbits we can pull out of the hat this weekend.
Could be anyone good for us today?
Well, we do. I think we do anyway. I was fortunate enough to spend a car journey with this man just before Cheltenham when he came to do an interview with me from Cheltenham all the way to London. I think by the time we got to London, I had probably interviewed him more than he had interviewed me. But it is the former English cricket captain, Mike Atherton. Mike, how are you?
Hi, Ruby. You're really scraping the barrel to get an English cricketer on your show now, or a former cricketer.
We're not. Cricket took off in this country and then you robbed our best player. So, you know, Owen Morgan went to play for ye and we're just about forgiving you now.
That's true. Owen Morgan, of course, led our team to a fantastic World Cup triumph last summer. So we're very grateful to him. He's been a great captain of our one-day side.
Mike, a car journey with Ruby. That doesn't sound very appealing. How was it for you?
Well, when I got into the car, I said to myself, I hope he kind of drives rather more safely than he rode. I mean, he's a great jock, of course, but he didn't always reach the destination. By the time I chatted to him about all his injuries, you know, the various broken arms, broken legs, fractured hips or displaced hips, God knows what, no spleen, I thought, I hope he drives a bit better than he rode. We got there safely in the end. It was a fantastic couple of hours, actually, for me, because I like my horse racing, but no, I've never sat on a horse. So to pick the brains of a great expert like Ruby was fantastic. It was for an interview in the Times. I write for the Times in England. So it was a great couple of hours for me to spend with him.
And how was his driving?
We got there safely. When we got to London, it was a bit hairy trying to find the car hire place. He'll tell you that he might have gone up and down the one-way streets a couple of times the wrong way, but we got there in the end.
I'd say he was in great form after that.
I just played the same trick that everybody else plays. I'm from the country. If I get stopped, look, I'm sorry, I'm from the country. I didn't realise it was one way. That's what country people do, Marie. You know it too well. You're from Clare. But anyway, Mike, I did learn on that car journey from Cheltenham to London with you that English cricket had invented this great new competition, the 100. Do you think it's going to get off the ground this summer?
I suspect not, no. I mean, obviously, when we spend that couple of hours together in your car, it feels like a lifetime ago because it was before Cheltenham. It was before, really, the coronavirus, you know, implanted itself in everybody's consciousness. It was simmering away in the background, but, you know, I don't think anybody envisaged what would eventually pass. I can't remember how long ago it was. We spent time together, probably 5 or 6 weeks ago now. But, you know, since then, obviously the world has turned upside down. It's particularly damaging in terms of sport, in the small world of sport for cricket, because obviously they're just about to get into the English season. I think the English county season should have begun today or thereabouts. So as you say, they've got this new tournament that they had planned. They haven't made any firm decisions yet because obviously they don't know when the lockdown is going to end. But I suspect it won't happen because the real aim of the new tournament is to grab a new audience, drive new people who were not otherwise interested in the game maybe to the game. And obviously, you know, if you can't market it, if you can't prep for it, and certainly if you have to play behind closed doors, it would defeat the purpose. So I suspect it won't happen. They'll put it back for a year. Of course, there are problems with that because a lot of people were putting back, you know, competitions for a year, whether it's the Olympics or the European Championships, whatever it is. So it will find itself up against some serious competitors. They haven't made any firm decisions yet in cricket, but what they'll probably try and do is push all the competitions that make the most revenue, and in cricket that's international cricket and the domestic T20 blast, they'll push those back as deep into the season as they can in the hope that, you know, cricket will start maybe late July, August, going into September, who knows.
And obviously, Mike, cricket being so international, when you look at the sides that play, India, South Africa, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and tourism is a huge part of it. Do you think cricket is going to suffer with people not really wanting to travel?
Well, it's a good question. As you say, it's a very international game. England were due to have Pakistan, West Indies and Australia over this summer. Pakistan were coming first, then there was a one-day series against Australia, and then West Indies coming towards the end. So there's got to be doubt about, you know, the ability of teams to travel. Right now should have been about the start of the Indian Premier League over in India, which is a real melting pot of all international players, often paid huge sums of money, certainly in cricketing terms. Pat Cummins, who's the number one bowler in the world from Australia, had signed a contract for somewhere upwards of $3 million for, you know, 6 weeks' worth of work or 2 months' work, and it's clearly not going to happen now. Maybe they'll put it back towards September, October, who knows. But as you say, the game is driven by international players playing in global tournaments, international teams playing each other. So all that will be under threat, certainly in the near term. I mean, eventually one hopes the game will get back to normal, but in the near term, all that will suffer. And there may have to be a refocus from a lot of the domestic teams, domestic clubs in England, the county clubs, on their own players, which may be no bad thing. Some small good thing might come out of it. Clearly, overseas players are going to find it difficult to get permission to travel.
And we had Joe Schmidt on last night, and he was envisaging that there would be a change in how rugby went forward from here. Do you think cricket will have to change, or is there any one change you would like to see made in cricket?
Yeah, it's tricky to know how the game will look when it comes out of all this. I mean, the two things that have driven the game in the last 10 years have been a real kind of free market economy, from following from the Indian Premier League, which started around about 2008, which is a dozen years ago, and then globalization, you know, the free movement of travel and, you know, the encouragement to travel, as we talked about a minute ago. Now, you'd think, given how this virus is, that those two things might suffer. So whether there'll be a change in that, whether there'll be fewer players travelling so freely. And also what's happened in cricket in recent years, there have been a lot of domestic, what you'd call domestic franchise T20 tournaments spring up, of which the 100 was kind of the latest version that we talked about a moment ago. A lot of those competitions don't make money. They might make money eventually down the line, but not many of them are very profitable right at the start of their introduction to the kind of international game. So, you know, whether those tournaments will suffer, because clearly the one thing everybody's going to be out of this virus is poorer, and that will be true of players, you know, the administrators, the boards that own the rights. So I think the competitions that don't make money, that are saddled with debt, they might be the ones that suffer, and there'll be a flight to quality, what you might call a flight to quality. So all those international tournaments, the test matches, the one-day games, the ICC events, that all make money, you know, you'd think those would be fairly safe and secure. But the stuff that doesn't make money, that is in debt, that's losing money, they're going to probably suffer a bit coming out of this.
And Mike, what about Irish cricket? How will they be directly affected by what's happening right around the world?
Well, Irish cricket, as you know, has been a great success story. And recently they became a full test-playing member, which has been a reflection on the success story that Irish cricket has been over the last 15 years or so. But it's not easy to make money, certainly playing test matches, which are not necessarily that well attended. And I know that in the last couple of years, you know, Irish cricket has taken a bit of a financial hit as well, through various things. So I think for all cricket boards and all counties, whatever shape or form they're in, the key will be just a kind of short-term survival to get through the next 2 or 3 months. And, you know, the players are taking salary cuts. The centrally contracted players in England have taken a salary cut. The counties have. You know, the boards no doubt will have to as well in terms of TV rights, all that kind of thing. And I should imagine it's exactly the same for Irish cricket. There'll be pressures on their cash flow in the short term. There'll be pressures from sponsors and television companies, all that kind of thing. So it's just about getting through the next 2 or 3 months or however long this thing lasts. And then when you come out the other side, you just kind of take a view. Where are you and how you can kind of then press on going forward? But certainly it's not going to be easy for anybody, and that would be true of Irish cricket as well.
I was reading Joss Butler the other day where the English cricketer said they wanted half of their £500,000 wage cut or donation to be given to the grassroots of the English and Welsh Cricket Association. Was that a noble call or a good decision by the players?
Well, they were under some pressure, as all professional sportsmen have been in England and Ireland, no doubt. And the players knew that they had to do something. It was just, you know, making sure that they did it in the right way and how they wanted to do it. So they agreed these are the centrally contracted players, of which there are about 20, so they're the ones paid by England rather than their counties. And they decided that they were happy to take a 20% pay cut, which is kind of, you know, the across the board, I suppose, what people are taking. So that amounted to about £500,000, which they were giving back to the ECB. But Joss Butler, as you rightly say, made it clear in a few of his interviews that the players wanted that to go to grassroots community places within the sport, whether that's the local clubs, youth pathways, all the things that no doubt will get hit as well, but all the things that are so vital to the future of the game, they wanted very clearly that money to go to specific areas of the game. And I think that's fair enough. And then following on from the England players, all the rest of the professional players in the last few days put out a statement saying that they'd agreed, you know, a pay cut as well. It comes to about 17%, and it's a combination of pay cuts, pay deferrals, pension contributions that have been cut, prize money given back, all adds up to a fair chunk as well. So the players have done their bit. I think the general impression is that cricket has done pretty well so far in very difficult circumstances. I really feel for people who have to make decisions in this environment. But from the England and Wales Cricket Board downwards, they seem to have done a pretty good job. You know, Tom Harrison, who's the chief executive of the ECB, you know, he and his executives have taken a pay cut. They've put a £61 million emergency financial package together to help counties get through the short term. So, you know, people have done a pretty good job, I think, in very difficult circumstances.
Mike, it's a little...
Sorry, what did you go on?
I was only going to bring it back a little bit to you, Mike, just a little bit off topic, but just for the moment in the world of sports journalism, it is a bit difficult for us, for all of us. And when you look at your career and the transition that you made from cricketer to journalist, you did it very well. And it's a rare enough thing. Like, what was your secret to your success?
Oh, I don't know about a secret. Well, there's two parts to it. I write, and that's for the Times here in England, and I work for Sky on their cricket coverage. So part written journalism, part broadcasting. I'd always, even when I was playing, I'd always written a bit. So I wrote a column in the Sunday Telegraph while I was playing, quite enjoyed it. So I always felt, you know, I might go down that route as well. And then broadcasting, I got into that when I finished. I don't know. It's not for me to say whether I'm any good, but I try and work hard at it. I enjoy it. I enjoy telling good stories around a game that lends itself to good stories, really. It's such an interesting game. You've never kind of got the game sorted. It always makes you think. You're always learning new things because of the international nature of it and some pretty interesting countries that you go to, like India and Pakistan. You know, there's some good stories to tell. Just before the virus, actually, I was in Pakistan for a week trying to put together a documentary on the return of international cricket there 10 years after a terrorist attack. So I enjoy telling those stories. I enjoy the game, try and work hard at it. And, you know, it's been an enjoyable few years. I mean, I've almost done it as long or maybe longer than I played for now, but I've enjoyed it, every minute of it.
And Mike, do you think when cricket does eventually get the green light, myself and Marie have been having this debate all week about how long it will take players to get back on a pitch or to get cricket players out playing the game. How long or how quickly do you think they could start the game up?
Yeah, Ashley Giles was asked this the other day. He's the kind of MD of the England team, I suppose. And he said that the medical people had told him, you know, 4, 6, 8 weeks maybe. But of course the players won't be doing nothing right now. It's tricky and they're obviously limited to the government guidelines, but they will be getting out for a run a day. Many of them have gyms or, you know, Peloton bikes in their homes, and they've been going, you know, against each other on the bikes. So they've been keeping fit, turning the hand over. That's not the same, of course, as bowling or batting. My own view is that I don't think the players should be too precious about it. I think once this virus is done and the lockdowns are over and people can get back to some sense of normality, that there will be such a desire to see live sport. People will be so enthusiastic for it that I think players have just got to get out there and play. And if it means that they're not quite at their best or not quite 100% fitness, so be it. I don't think anybody will worry about that. They'll just want to see live sport. A little bit, I never liked the comparisons with the war, but after the Second World War, there was a series called the Victory Tests in England in 1945, which were, you know, had such enthusiasm about them. You kind of feel there could be a sense of that once sport of any of every description starts again. So I think the players have just got to get out there and play. In a small way, it's a bit like going back 20 years when players would have had off-seasons more so than they do now, would have come out into a domestic season after 2 or 3 months off, you know, pretty cold, really, and not in practice and not particularly fit. Of course, it's not like that nowadays because players virtually play 12 months a year and they're much fitter than my generation was or the generation before. But I think they'll just have to get out there even if they're 85-90% fit.
Well, Mike, I love that word, precious. I've learned something new today, and that's going to be my word all next week.
Oh, no.
Thanks a million for taking our call.
That's all right. It's great to talk to you again, Ruby. Thanks.
Cheers, Mike. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. We were chatting to former English cricketer Mike Atherton there. Ruby, you're a fan, I'd say.
I found him a very interesting man. He was obviously a world-class cricketer, but I found him a very interesting man to talk to. He had a view on everything, and it was great thought put into what he wanted to say or what he was going to tell you. And I must say I did enjoy my car journey from Cheltenham back in February to London with him. And I think it kind of, I would watch cricket on the television occasionally, definitely 2020, but it definitely sparked an interest in me.
A few years back, a long time ago actually, I'd say it was around 2010 or 2011, I did a similar car journey with Kieran Fallon. His driving was fast.
Yeah, he's a flat jockey. They're always in a hurry.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd do it again now. Mike's would brave.
You? Yeah. Fellow Clareman, of course.
Yeah. It was great, actually. It was really good. And it was funny because we talk about how journalism has changed so much. Like when I was doing the interview with Kieran, I wanted to do it and I was writing for the Sunday Indo at the time. And to get hold of him, I had to ring the local parish priest who knew him, and the parish priest got onto him and he rang him and he said he'd do it. So it was just a case, we arranged a time, I told him what time my flight was coming in, he picked me up, and we just spent the day and I went racing with him, and it was fantastic insight and access, and it was brilliant. Whereas now, like, you know, if you want to talk to someone, it's you send them a DM on Twitter or you get their email or something like that. So in a short enough space of time, things have changed.
For the worse or for the better, Marie?
I think for the worse, because back then, like, a lot of the time it was down to your contacts and who you knew, like people that my dad or my brother had been in school with. Gerlach Nan, Shane McGrath did me give interviews with me when I was starting off, and there was always a trust there. So because someone else vouches for you, that trust is there. I don't know if the same trust is there now because everybody is so accessible and you kind of, that bridge is almost gone now. Lucky enough, I'm more established now and it's easier. But if I was starting out now, I don't know if it would be as easy, because that kind of way of getting somebody to ask for you or make the contact for you, it doesn't exist as much anymore.
I found that as a jockey, actually, someone did recommend someone you were more inclined to do the interview or give of your time, but the world keeps moving faster and faster.
And you better keep that phone book open now for the next few weeks.
If you have any ideas over the weekend, Marie, you just send them on. I'll make the phone calls.
So Ruby, we saw today that the restrictions are being extended, and I have to say, as time goes on, it becomes more and more clear that we'd be absolutely lost without our frontline workers. And we have been chatting to a few of them over the last few weeks, and their conversations that I really enjoy because they give us different perspective, and that makes us realise how important these people are and how much they do for us. And I never would have even thought too much about it before. So I'm delighted to say we are joined by Lindsay Davey, who works in the Dublin Fire Service, and Tipperary hurler Paddy Maher, who is a guard. Lindsay, I'm going to go to you first. Just your life right now, what's it like? How have you been affected by this pandemic?
Well, obviously from a football perspective, obviously everything's been put on hold, so any kind of training that we're doing is all on individual basis, but we've kind of been given our individual programme to do, which has been great. But I suppose from a work perspective, it's just kind of business as usual for us. You know, I work in the airport and we specialise in aviation emergencies, so obviously there's still a lot of cargo flights coming in, and our fire service is vital for them being able to land. So for us, it's just our main priority is just to kind of keep the airport open and running.
Can you use the airport, Lindsay, to run around and keep yourself fit, seeing there's only cargo coming in now?
When I get the chance, trying to do a bit just to kind of keep the mind busy and do a little bit of training if I can when we get a free chance.
Tipperary hurler and guard Paddy Maher is also on the line. Paddy, I saw some pictures of you fixing heating for residents in Limerick. You're keeping busy anyway.
Hi, Les. Keeping busy, Marie. Plenty to keep us on our toes at the moment. I suppose it's times at the moment, but look, we have to put the head down and keep driving on. So, you wouldn't know what to be facing today and day out at the moment, but look, if you're able to help anyway at all, it's what we're there for, and it's all part of the work we give to the community.
Paddy, you're obviously a community guard in Moyross in Limerick. Have you found much difference in the community? Are people quieter? Are they a bit more afraid? Or are you finding people in the same mood and humour?
No, definitely there's a change. All right, Ruby. High degree of uncertainty, you could say. A lot of seeing the members of the community you'd be meet. Well, you don't meet as many anymore because obviously they're not out, but look, if we're around the area and making sure everything's okay and you meet them going to the shop or that, they're kind of, you know, there is a lot of worry in people and they don't know what they're facing into at the moment. So I suppose we're trying to just give them a bit of a degree of certainty if we can at all. But at the end of the day, it's tough times for everyone. And it's very, very hard to see what way it'll pan out in the future. But we're just there to help everyone as best we can at the moment.
Lindsay, do you feel that as well? That, you know, people are kind of looking to you guys, to the guards, to the nurses for that stability to know that, you know, you're still there and doing your jobs?
Yeah, definitely. Like at the end of the day, like we're just trying to, like I said, we're trying to keep the airport open, and you know, there's vital supplies coming in with the like Square Lingus bringing in the PPE, and then people as well trying to come home. So we're just going to work every day. We're just keeping the airport open and trying to keep that vital supply chain open. And like I said, everyone's just trying to do the best they can under these kind of stressful conditions. And if you're anyway being able to play a part in that, you know, we're very lucky to be able to contribute.
Lindsay, there's no getting away from the fact, though, yourself and Paddy, your competitors, your winners, your sports people, your people that we enjoy watching all the time as well. And for you, like, you've had such a long, consistent career, 17 seasons now, to not be playing, it must be quite difficult.
Yeah, it's just another challenge, I suppose, that you have to face as an athlete. But I tell you, definitely so much respect for athletes that go out on a daily basis doing their own individual training. You kind of realise how important, or you know, how much you enjoy being a part of a team setup. It's definitely a lot easier to stay motivated when you're going to a team session, and you definitely miss just the fun and the competitive element that you have with the girls when you meet up. Like, it's definitely just a challenge, but it's something that we're all kind of working through and just trying to keep ourselves fit and active at the moment, because like I said, we don't really know what's coming down the line. We're trying our best to stay fit with the possibility of hopefully a championship down the line, but unfortunately it's still, everything's up in the air, so we don't really know where we stand.
Lindsay, you played in your first All-Ireland final when you were 15. Can you see any other girl ever doing that? Can you see any, has women's football come on now that there's no way a 15-year-old would get a game? Or
Yeah, well, they're actually, they won't happen again, unfortunately, because there's a new rule in that you can only play one grade below. So to play senior football, you can only play minor as well. And obviously the key reason behind that is just to prevent player burnout. So when I was playing, when I first started off, I was playing 16th minor, senior, club football, school football, and it was just probably too much for to be doing at such a young age. So I think just in terms of preventing player burnout, that rule was brought in.
Paddy, you're like Lindsay as well, like so consistent. We've seen you win All-Irelands, playing for your club as well, doing so well. Just having hurling such a big part of your life and such a big part of your identity and not having that now, what's it like?
Yeah, it's a massive change, Marie. I suppose it's very sweet at the moment. We're so used to having a routine of, you know, doing our training throughout the week, whether it's the gym work or meeting up with the rest of the lads in the field on a Tuesday and a Thursday night. So it's very, very different, and it's I suppose in a way it's hard to get your head around it. As I said, you're so used to a routine for someone to time of your life, and so you know it's difficult. But I suppose you have to put the head down, and there's a lot of take a degree of ownership on yourself to keep your body and the condition you have. Yeah.
Oh, we've lost Paddy there. We'll have to bring him back in a second.
I thought you'd lost me for a minute.
I wouldn't be that lucky.
Lindsay, just listening to Paddy there and coming back to you, how much exactly can you do on a daily basis training-wise?
Well, I suppose me, it just depends on my work schedule. At the moment, my main focus is, you know, just showing up for work whenever I'm needed. But outside of that, you know, kind of, if you're going out and you're even just being able to do a running session, a gym session, obviously at home, or a skills session, it's just trying to fit in what you can, when you can, obviously with the restrictions in, staying within 2 kilometres of your house now can be a little bit harder, but I suppose the initiatives that have been happening over the past couple of weeks have been brilliant with Dublin and even through the LGFA. Like, we've been using the likes of the Zoom meetings so that we can still have team meetings just to check in and see how everyone's doing. We have Pilates classes with our physio. We have a weekly cook-off with our nutritionist, Kate, and Mick has different skill challenges set up for us to kind of keep us active. And even with the LGFA, like, sort of the benefit of technology again is they're doing weekly quizzes to kind of just keep everyone entertained. And I think Marty Marcy is presenting one tonight at 8 p.m. And again, there's different skill challenges with Orla Farmer. And then even during the week, they have an LGFA talk show. And I think some from Jigsaw was on, and just giving tips for young people that may be struggling at this time and help to try and keep their motivation up. So there's been fantastic initiatives that have been able to use with technology, which is kind of something that's really positive that's coming out of all this.
Paddy, what about ye training-wise? What's Liam Sheedy got you doing? Is he on Zoom?
And we have we're going to do bits and pieces to be doing. I suppose we're trying to use best what we can at the moment, you know, whether it's our back garden or fields around us, but it's difficult at the moment, but look, it's something different than, as I said earlier, to try and take ownership yourself and try and keep yourself in the best possible shape possible, if that is possible at the moment, with the resources that we have, and just look, picking up a few bits and pieces off the club there, a few dumbbells and stuff to keep us going, and an exercise bike, and just keep on top of things as best as you can.
There's been a lot of reminiscing, Paddy, over the last few weeks about the 90s hurling and the knockout championship and the great contest that it threw up. And we know today that there will be restrictions in place for another few weeks. So it does look like, realistically, championship is going to have to change in some sort of way, and knockout could be on the cards. Is that something that you would welcome?
To be honest, it's not welcome anything at the moment. The way things are looking, but yeah, look, I can imagine how exciting that could be for the spectator, for everyone. You know, if we can come through this in the next number of weeks, that, you know, such exciting games to look forward to, and so much on the line, that I think it'd be great for every county and every supporter that to have something that to look forward to through these tough times. And you know, it would be great, you know, to be tough on the players' eyes in terms of, you know, what he kind of one chance at it, but. Look, at the moment, the way things are, we're in a privileged position to be able to find a county jersey. So I think to be a fascinating spectacle for everyone involved, if that was the case.
Myself and Marie have been having a bit of an ongoing battle here about the time lapse needed for players to get back from whenever restrictions are lifted. And we had Mike Atherton on there a minute ago who said players are going to have to be a little less precious. But Paddy, you first, and Lindsay, I'm going to ask you as well. How much training do you think you'll need before you could go back to play a championship match?
I suppose it's hard to kind of gauge, to be honest with you. You definitely want probably 2 or 3 weeks to, whatever we can do, you can run around fields all you want and cycle bikes, whatever, but at the end of the day, you have to be able to take it and get your hurling sharpness back. So I definitely think you might need 2 or 3 weeks, but the way things are, we'll be all mad for road when the team gets back to normal, please God. And look, if we can get a couple of weeks back together as a group underneath our belt, we'll be ready as good as anybody else, hopefully.
So Paddy agrees with me. Lindsay, what do you think?
Yeah, I suppose, we're at the benefit that everyone is in the same boat. So every single county or club player is going to have the exact same challenge. But yeah, I suppose it would be nice to definitely have 2 or 3 weeks back together, just to be able to work on some team tactics, I suppose. But like Paddy said, I think everyone will just be delighted to kind of get back. And if we do get some sort of championship, we'll just be delighted.
And Lindsay's with me, as in everybody's going to be in the same boat. And Paddy, could you not just throw yourself against the wall there for a bit of contact or something?
we'll get enough of that at the end of the summer, hopefully. Try and save the body as best we can.
Paddy, I know you've spoken before about your job and how it's given you perspective. What about this pandemic, this kind of situation that we're all in? Do you think it's going to change our mindset when it comes to what we think about sport?
Oh, definitely. I think, I suppose, in one way, it just shows, highlights how important sport is to everybody in their lives. You know, at the end of the day, we all say that life is more important than health, which it is, obviously. But at the end of the day, a lot of people's lives is sport, you know. And I know for me and a lot of people around my family, and that we live day in, day out to go to hurling matches, whether it's our club or with the county, you know. And a lot of people have been in the same boat, you know, whether what sport they're playing. So, look, it is a very important part of our lives. And at the end of the day, we're seeing what's going on around the world at the moment, and that gives a lot of perspective. And I suppose when it does come back, please God, to a bit of normality down the line, we'll just enjoy it more. And everyone, whether it's going watching games or playing in them ourselves, that we'll just enjoy it and take it for what it is, because we've seen what's happening now, and it's not nice. So, look, we'll try our best to give everyone a kind of a G up when we get back, and hopefully to be cracking games into the summer.
And Paddy, have you seen, or do you see it in Mark, that without the distraction of sport, people are a little more bored and a little more idle?
Yeah, I suppose it's hard. People, you can see people out physically walking and looking after themselves that way, but then you've got to see their side of things mentally too. How are people taking this? And, you know, I suppose being kind of locked up in their homes and left idle, you know, people don't have work to go to, and they're taken away from their routine. And it might be fine for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, but as this drags on, you wonder how people are affected by this. So, look, there's a few things we may have to look down the line and look out for a lot of people, our families, our friends, because you don't know what way people are taking this at the moment. But, look, again, it's new for everyone.
Paddy, that's a lot of responsibility on you as well. Like, you're, for some people, you're the only person that they're seeing. You're their only point of contact.
Yeah, look, I suppose, look, that's what I'm there for. That's the job of a community guard. You're there to help everyone in your community who are vulnerable, or even, you know, families, young families, or there could be elderly there that you're trying to look out as best you can for them all. And as I said at the start of the conversation, you don't know what you're facing every day, but that's what we signed up for when we went into this career. So, look, in a way, it is enjoyable that you're able to help out people and support people as best you can. Obviously, the circumstances aren't good at the moment, and you don't want to be facing these in reality, but this is what we are facing. And look, we're trying to help everyone as best we can around us and make them feel safe and secure as we can.
Lindsay, I think a lot of people are who maybe weren't playing sport for a long time are going to go back, and people that are playing still are probably going to appreciate it a little bit more. Do you think that's going to happen to you, and are you going to be playing for about another 5 or 6 years?
I don't know if my body will last for another 5 or 6 years. Like, you know, for me this year, I was saying this would probably be my last year with Dublin. So if I was to go out on this kind of note, it'll be very unfortunate, but look, hopefully that won't be the case. And I suppose it's one of those things that we'll just see what happens down the line. But I think when people do get back to normality, they definitely will appreciate the benefit that sports has in their life. And I know even today I received a message from my friend saying that her niece was finding her motivation was low, and just could I send her a message of just support and just give her some maybe challenges to do to kind of keep the mind ticking over. So I think even for people's mental health, they really appreciate just the impact of sports has in their life, and we'll definitely be all looking forward to probably getting back to normality soon.
And Paddy, just before we let you go, we do know that it is a real important 3 weeks ahead for everyone in this country. And as someone that's on the front line, do you have a message for people for the next 3 weeks?
Yeah, Marie, basically, look, it's, everyone's finding it tough at the moment, and I suppose the announcement there today that it's going to last a bit longer. I suppose everyone's just there to look after each other, and I suppose we're looking after each other by staying away from each other, if that makes much sense, and just keeping in, you know, it is tough, but you see, I see out out daily there at work, you know, you can see people are adhering to mostly are staying at home and staying away from each other and sticking to the social distances. It is tough for everyone, but at the end of the day, we're helping each other out here by doing it. And if we can nail this now, sooner we'll get back to reality, and that's what we all want.
Lindsay Davey and Paddy Maher, thanks so much for joining us. You're the ones that are helping us out, and we really appreciate it. Let's take a quick break.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Marie, they were two very interesting people to talk to.
They were. I feel bad now that I was complaining about having to get sports guests for the next 3 weeks.
I'm telling you, you just don't realise how lucky you are.
I know. Look at me here in a studio, looking at you, freshly shaven, great form. Doesn't get better than this.
Oh my God. And so life goes on.
It does. Well, I have some good news anyway.
What's
Alan
that?
Cawley is back. We haven't spoken to him in a while. He's been really busy becoming an Instagram sensation. Alan, how are you?
What is an Instagram sensation, Marie?
You,
exactly. Come on, you've got your own show going on. I know you're dying to tell us about it.
Good, yeah, Alan, yourself.
Basically, it's good to hear from both of you. Yeah, obviously, the strange times that we live in, Marie, and I haven't been in with you in a couple of weeks, so... I just came up with a little idea last week of the video calls on Instagram, and I wouldn't be great now with technology, but I got a list together of obviously former football players. So we did out a list last week, we did another one this week, and then I mix it up on the Saturday with a different sports person. So I'm sure Ruby will be getting a call, but I haven't seen him on Instagram, so I doubt he'll oblige.
Where did he find that? what channel is Instagram on?
Isabel, we'll have to sort it out for you.
Yeah, so, no, they've been going really well, Marie. Yeah, people seem to like them. It's just basically chit-chat, and obviously I'm, like everyone else, a sports fanatic and missing out on the sport, so anything to fill the day with a bit of thoughts on questions for lads, and they're all, to be fair, the lads have been brilliant with their time. We've had Kevin Doyle, Andy Reid, Clinton Morrison is on tonight, Pádraic Amond, Owen Doyle, Neil Fenn, Chris Shields, Derek Pender. So it's a mix of lads that have played League of Ireland, the highest level in England, international football. Ken Doherty was on, great stories last week. I have the Gooch on tomorrow night, Colin Cooper. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And it's just been a distraction in these strange times, Marie.
Absolutely.
Are we getting a few quid for this big, long advert you're out to have?
If you come on, I'll waive the fees, don't worry.
Alan, we have, luckily enough, had some news over the last little while with Stephen Kenny. Been announced. Well, we knew he was going to get it. We didn't think he was going to get the Republic of Ireland senior job so soon, but he did. And we've heard from him now. We had him on the show last night, and he's speaking quite a lot yesterday. And he's so determined to bring some joy back to us football fans with the way he's going to get Ireland playing. Should we be getting our hopes up?
I think it's an exciting time. I wouldn't be putting too much pressure on him, Marie, but I definitely think it's an exciting time. Stephen obviously brings, as you say, a lot of determination, but there's a freshness as well that I think he'll bring, in terms of freshening up the squad and young lads, and definitely also in the style of play, because we've been so dragged down by Trapattoni, O'Neill, Mick McCarthy, and people will make the argument that, as we always hear, well, we don't have the players, but I think that's a lazy argument, to be honest with you, because it's up to the manager to instill belief into the players that we have, and I think we do have players that should have performed or could have performed maybe better than what we've seen in recent times, and I think Stephen will instill that belief, and we've seen that in his previous jobs. He's doing a great job with the under-21s. And that's the one thing, if you speak to most players that have worked with him or if you spend any time with Stephen, that's the biggest thing that I think he commands, is that he instills a belief that he will make players feel that they can go out and compete with any nation and any calibre of player whatsoever. And, yeah, I think we are right to be excited. I wouldn't be putting too much pressure on him in terms of thinking all of a sudden we're going to start playing like Spain or anything like that. But I definitely think you'll see a change in style and the emergence of a lot of young players and freshness to the squad.
But Alan, there's going to be a whole new level of scrutiny on Stephen Kenny now when you move from League of Ireland to the under-21s to the international team. And instilling belief is fine, but how will he react to the negative publicity he could get if things go wrong, to all the extra media attention he's going to get, the more press conferences he's going to have to do. It's going to be a whole new ball game for him.
Absolutely, Ruby, and that'll be a whole level of scrutiny that I suppose Stephen probably won't be used to, because as you say, at the very highest level, you'll be getting it from all angles in terms of BBC, Sky, ITV at international football that maybe Stephen wouldn't have been used to before. But I think he'll have prepared himself in the meantime, because I think it was good the fact that he had the 21's job. I'm sure he's well prepared, and I know for a fact he'll be well prepared when it comes to the big job. And that's something that I suppose we won't know until the time comes. But there will come a time, absolutely, like it's all good now when people praising him, and rightly so, and he deserves the job. And I'm a massive fan, as you know, Stephen, and I'm really excited about it. But there will come a time when results won't go his way. He'll have to deal with maybe the odd controversy might emerge, as we see in football from time to time. So we won't know until actually something like that arises. But I have full faith that he'd be able to cope with that no problem, because he'd be very well prepared for it.
A bit of a small controversy today with James McLean hitting out at Gary Breen and Stephen Hunt for their comments for criticising the new Ireland boss. What do you think, Alan?
I don't think he needs to be getting involved in that, James McLean, and especially coming off the back of a couple of weeks ago, the Instagram thing as well. And you would think at this stage that James McLean would have learned his lesson. And I can understand Gary Breen's comments, because he's obviously very loyal to Mick McCarthy. And if he wants to have a view and have an opinion on it, that's fine. I don't think Stephen Kenny needs James McLean to be coming out fighting his battles. I saw the comments. If I was James McLean, I'd just concentrate on his football and do his talking on the pitch. But we've said that about him many a time. But yet he still seems to fall into the trap of having something to say. And I don't, because in fairness to Gary Breen and Stephen Hunt, they are entitled to their opinion, whatever that may be. I don't think James McLean needs to be coming out with those comments, to be honest with you.
Was that James McLean nailing his colours to Stephen Kenny's mast to try and get himself into Stephen Kenny's setup?
Well, he'll be in the setup, because obviously he worked with Stephen at Derry, Ruby, and I know Stephen was obviously fond of James, and James gone on to have a very good career, as we know, and he'll hope to be part of it. But I don't think Stephen will be picking players on sentiment. Absolutely not. And even the fact that he has the League of Ireland background, and people thinking now he might be calling up League of Ireland players, he'll be only picking players on merit. But I think James McLean will have a fight on his hand because of the emergence of a lot of the young players that you'll see, and definitely the likes of Malumbi, Adam Ida, Aaron Connolly, all these boys, particularly the front players, Ida and Connolly, playing those wide positions. So James McLean will have a fight on his hand just to stay in the team and stay in the squad, and he's probably been lucky to be in the team over the last number of games, because it's not like he's played great in a lot of the games. So I think he should just concentrate on his club form, and hopefully that earns him a place in Stephen Kenny's team. But he will have a fight on his hands, because I don't think Stephen Kenny will be picking any players on sentiment.
Who do you think are going to be the big winners now with this appointment?
I definitely think a lot of the young players. I was just going through even the team there and I suppose what the new look team might look like. I don't think there'll be wholesale changes, Marie, either. I think what will happen is Stephen will introduce a lot of these young players into the squad, and if it's a thing that we do have three or four Nations League games, that will be an opportunity to blood some of the young lads. If it's a thing that the playoff game goes ahead maybe earlier than what's expected, and Stephen is faced with that as maybe his first or second game, I still think he'll stick to a lot of the players that have performed for Mick McCarthy. You look at the back four, the likes of Doherty. I think Seamus Coleman will have a fight on his hands, even though Stephen has come out and said that he'll be his captain. But you'll have Doherty, Duffy, Egan, Enda Stevens. That's the makings of a very good back four. In the midfield area, then, I can definitely see Malumbi challenging to break into the team. He's had a brilliant season so far, obviously out on loan with Millwall. And I know Stephen's a big fan of his. He's the under-21 captain. And in the forward areas as well, he's obviously working at the moment with Adam Ida, Aaron Connolly, Parrott. I definitely think Ida and Connolly will have a chance of breaking in, because you look at the forward positions with Ireland at the moment, and we're kind of a little bit weak in that area. I still think McGoldrick will have a big part to play, but Stephen likes to play the 4-3-3, so you might see the likes of Ida on the left and Connolly maybe on the right or something like that. But they'll be the big winners. Five or six of those young lads will definitely come into the squad.
What about maybe Jack Byrne or Colin Robinson?
Yeah, Jack Byrne will definitely, I think, might stay in the squad, Ruby. Again, once he's performing, and to be fair, he's had a great start to the season, Jack, at Shamrock Rovers. Had the playoff game gone ahead on when it was expected there a couple of weeks ago, I definitely think he would have been in Mick McCarthy's squad, because he was playing well enough to be in the squad. Once he continues playing to that level with Shamrock Rovers, I've no doubt Stephen will keep him in the squad, because he's the type of player that Stephen will certainly appreciate. And he likes creative fellas in that final third who can make a difference, see a pass, open up a back four. So I definitely think Jack will stay in contention and stay in and around the squad once he keeps performing to the level that he is.
Well, thanks a million for taking our call. We better let you off to do your homework on the Gooch. We don't want to be saving you from your Instagram career for too much longer.
All about the research, Ruby. All about the research.
Alan, just before we go, do you dress up for it? Special effort?
Might put on a shirt and tie tomorrow night, will I, for the Gooch?
Save that for when Ruby comes on, because you've got him now.
It's funny, Marie. It's funny. I have a T-shirt on or a nice jumper or whatever, and then you don't want to know what's the bottom half, the slippers and the shorts or whatever, because all you see is the headshot.
Alan, thanks so much.
See you
Cheers,
later.
Alan.
See you, Ruby. Thank
bye
you.
Bye-bye.
Ruby, that's all we have time for tonight.
I enjoyed it, Marie. In case people were wondering where Dunnock was, he's still not over.
He's where?
Where is Dunnock anyway?
I don't know. He might text us in, 51552. I presume he's at home. He was talking about seals. He's probably out searching for seals anyway.
God, I hope he's not. You're after getting him into some trouble.
Right. Game on 2FM.